You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show.
I'm a pastor's kid. I am very into religious thrillers and horror, probably largely because of that. I still consider myself, I don't like the word Christian because of all the connotations, but I'm a believer in Jesus, but I'm not really a believer in the church. But what intrigues me is it's always interesting to me to see kind of genre fare that's religious based, and clearly that's something you take some strong interest in, both with this film, and you sent me a short you have kind of going around the circuit right now called No Soliciting, which is a no budget short that really really takes aim at some of the the interesting I don't know. Let's just say at the culture, at the faith culture. So, if you don't mind starting with telling me a little bit about, what kind of brought you into this topic matter. Were you raised in the church? Is it something that, I guess just kind of start with that.
Sure. Yeah. The easiest way I describe myself to people is that I am a pastor's kid, but my dad was never the head of the church. He was a deacon, but I tell that to people to kind of nail home like the extremism that I experienced.
I get you.
My parents met at seminary, so it's not just like average kind of Jesus-y people. They were like hardcore extreme in Jesus, and while they aren't as extreme as any of the movies that I make. Through that, I was introduced to these kinds of people. A lot of the things in my movies are based on things I've experienced or heard, seen. And so the more I saw, the more I kind of just moved away from it all, because I was also exposed to multiple points of view. And anytime I asked any kind of questions at all, just kind of if you ask a question to people, they snap at you and you're the asshole for asking it, even if you're coming from a place of earnestness. And just for me personally, that was not enough. That makes a lot of sense.
I what denomination was the seminary they were at?
That also added to the confusion. So they started Presbyterian. They actually worked at a Presbyterian church on the boardwalk in Jersey. But then we moved here to Texas, and there was a Presbyterian upbringing for me there. But then they didn't like some of the ways that they were going, so they switched to the Baptist. So I was seeing like all these things and trying to kind of, if you ask them what they were, I haven't asked them in a while what they see themselves as, but now they're still going to the Baptist church, even though they left and went to the Presbyterian church for a bit. So that whole thing confused me too.
That's interesting because, so the couple things you said rung bells. I grew up in Jersey, so I'll probably come back to the Jersey thing in a minute, but,
sure. Yeah.
But as far as the upbringing goes, so you said that they didn't like some of the way things were going. Were they possibly one of the groups that left, or people that left when the Presbyterian Church was quote unquote getting too liberal?
Probably. Yeah. I know I was young for it, so I don't know, and I can't speak for them, but there were lots of discussions about things, and I think woman leadership was a problem.
So it's interesting because the Presbyterian Church kind of went into multiple directions, and there's like the main Presbyterian Church became two different ones, and one that allowed women to preach, one that eventually became I don't know that they're welcoming and affirming, but I think they're welcoming.
Sure.
You know, not necessarily affirming per se. And then the other side went the other way of no, hell no, you know? And so that's why it's interesting. So maybe their church was going the route of becoming more liberal. It may or may not be the reason they left. I was curious because of the way you described that. I grew up a pastor's kid myself. My mom was mostly a youth pastor. She didn't actually become a head pastor of a church till I was in college. So, prior to that, she was mostly our youth pastor when I was growing up. So, being a deacon's kid, it's probably similar in a lot of ways, because she's not necessarily the one running the church, but she's there all the time. She's still doing everything, involved with everything. I mean, church was, like, I always tell people, like, I spent anywhere from 8 to 14 hours every Sunday in the church building besides a handful of hours during the week. And then why I don't go to church now, even as a believer, because I feel like I did my time.
Sure, yeah, so, I totally get that. I was also a teacher's kid at the private school, so it's like the combination of the two things.
Right.
I know exactly how that is. You're the first one there, you're the last one out.
Every time, man.
These services.
Oh, yeah, and my dad was one of the trustees, so he was usually one of the people who opened the building in the morning. And then my mom was the one who closed it at night, because that's when youth group was at night. And, literally my parents were the first ones in and the first ones out every week. But, so, yeah, I definitely get it. Now, interestingly, I grew up in I grew up in North Jersey. So I grew up in a pretty apolitical church. They were not very politically conservative or politically liberal. They were very kind of in the middle. The American Baptist Church, is a weirdly loose denomination, and it's not like the Southern Baptists, which have a pretty strong convention. The American Baptist Church is kind of like, so there's a couple tenets you have to believe in, and then you kind of do what you want. And that's kind of way it was. So I didn't grow up with as that strict upbringing that a lot of Christians did, but like, I'm so fascinated watching it because I went to a Christian college and I met so many extraordinarily sheltered and kids who went through some crazy stuff, and a lot of them broke out of it during college. I mean, Eastern's not known for being a very conservative school. In fact, the faculty is quite liberal. In fact, in Christian college world, we're the bad guys because we're too liberal.
Nice.
But at the same time, like, there's still a lot of rules. Like, you know, you go to a normal college, anybody can go on the dorms and whatever. No, we had certain hours that girls could be on boys' dorms, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I went to a Christian college for a couple of years, and that's how it was. Yeah.
So you said you grew up in Jersey when you were little. Down on the boardwalk. What boardwalk were you guys at?
I was like 6 months old by the time we left. After my parents got married. Yeah.
Gotcha. So you don't remember living in Jersey much at all, or even at all?
Nope. No, okay. I remember Philadelphia a bit, but my main memories come from Hawaii when I was four. So Philadelphia would have been 2 to 3, and I remember like very, very small things. Hawaii when I was four, and then we moved to Texas when I was six, and I've been here.
All right, so the bulk of your memories are in Texas, so.
Yeah, I just tell people I'm from Texas because it's easier.
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense that way, I'm sure. Is San Antonio area where you've always been, or is that where you just ended up?
My mom's from here. My dad's from California. And my dad got a job here, and they moved down here. And they've been here since. So I've always been here in San Antonio, yeah.
All right, cool, cool. So so that definitely helps kind of put a framework on your films. Are besides the two I've seen, the you know, No Soliciting and Nothing But the Blood, are your other films also religious in nature, or are those the only two that are?
Not really. Nothing But the Blood is the first one that actually has like a budget of more than $12.
Right.
No Soliciting is incredibly rough, but no, I would say the others are more either just short comedies that I filmed with my friends, or weird horror-ish things I put up on YouTube with friends, but
the kind of stuff that, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, just to shoot some shit and be like, hey, we had fun.
Nice, nice. I'm glad that somebody took notice and you were able to kind of get a budget, because I think Nothing But the Blood is fantastic. You know, obviously it's not a huge budget, but you don't need a huge budget to tell the story you're telling. So it works in kind of being, you know, a focused story. So without giving away too much to people who probably haven't seen it, since it literally just came out on VOD.
Yeah.
You know, what would be your short description of what people are going into, you know, without any spoilers?
Sure. Small town journalist gets assigned to cover the opening of a small church, a controversial church that's been spreading throughout America, but has some pretty extreme fundamentalistic kind of things. And things take a creepy and violent turn, and eventually she's forced to kind of face if she is able to fight the hatred that they expound, or if you can even fight that kind of thing at all while still maintaining your humanity, I guess.
Right.
The word for it, yeah.
No, that's a good way of putting it. I like that. You know, the journalist character, obviously, kind of the main character that, you know, everything kind of flows around. She's fantastic. The story, one of the things that jumps out at me really interesting in the beginning is that this controversial church is, while spreading nationwide or throughout the region, they're not super specific about where it's spreading, but spreading. This church. It's like a home-based church. So each church is kind of like, so it's interesting because, most of the time when you see a lot of these big fundamentalist churches that I've experienced, they're like bigger churches. And so that was interesting to me.
Yeah.
But not to say that hasn't happened, because I definitely think it has, but it was interesting to me because the home church is something that always interested me in a positive way, but,
yeah,
I've never been involved with any that were successful. I've attempted to be part of some upstarts and they haven't worked. I think part of the reason they interest me is it's kind of, you know, the way Jesus did church. And it also interests me because I don't like church buildings and have a stigma. I kind of dig that, you know, but, one of the things that a home church or a lot of these churches that are not associated with denominations, I think, often fall into as a trap or an issue is they don't have proper oversight, and this one clearly didn't.
Yeah.
A friend of mine moved from Chicago to New York to help run a church that he got kind of brought into, and the guy who ran the church had no board of elders or deacons or anything like that. And yes, there's a lot of bureaucracy that happens with those that isn't always good, but to have like no board that you go to and just have free reign is really dangerous as like one man.
Yeah.
And ultimately my friend left that church and went back home to Chicago because he had some clashes with the things the other pastor was doing. And, And the other pastor basically said, well, I'm in charge, too bad. And he's like, all right, bye. But, I think this church in your movie is in that regard. It's kind of one figurehead, and anything he said goes, you know? And that's always scary, because it's real easy, even for a quote unquote good person, to kind of let the power go to their head.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And I've seen some home churches as a kid, and still know people who do them. So that was just a broad idea there, but they do tend to fall apart a lot, but also they're still incredibly popular. There's a line where the journalist is in an interview with the new pastor of a church, and she says 10 to 12 million people attend home churches. And that's a stat from like 2016. I just found that and took it, and I think it's interesting. But I also think it's terrifying at the same time, because that means that there are, if you've got religion and you're a good person and you're not harming people, more power to you. I don't have a problem. What the movie has a problem with and examines is the people who use it to harm people. So like the Westboro Baptist Church is obviously a huge influence on this, and they're a home church, and they're not that huge. So I was
It's funny you say that. I never think of them as a home church, but they are. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know.
It's
very intriguing. That stat was. I was going to ask you about that, because that did take me by surprise, because I didn't know they were that popular. And maybe it's because I've grown up in the Northeast my whole life, and everything's so cosmopolitan and metropolitan, even when I'm in a more rural area now. But even my rural area where I'm at is far less rural than most of the country. I'm only 40 minutes from Center City, Philadelphia, so I'm not that rural. But I live in the trees. I live in the woods, you know? So
yes,
it's kind of
this
weird thing in that regard. But, there's just so much about that really blows my mind. And like I said, the scary part that I see that I think you're saying too is it's that it really is this lack of any kind of structural oversight that allows them to just do what they want.
Yeah.
And it's
no
scary.
Internal, what's the word? Judgment? Like, none of the checks and balances, I guess.
Right.
Is a good way to put it. The guy who's the head is the head, and that's how it goes.
Right. And as the bureaucracy of something, I mentioned my dad was a trustee at the church, your dad's a deacon. Those are such bureaucratic kind of roles in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And there's so much bureaucracy in the church as a whole in those kind of churches, but it does provide for some checks and balances in those denominational churches and those churches that are filmed like that. And so, yes, there's still a lot of abuses that go on in those kind of churches, and I'm not going to ever deny that.
For sure.
There's still at least like, there's a mechanism to vote out the pastor. There's a mechanism to bring in a new pastor. There's, you know, as opposed to a church that's found by a guy who calls himself Apostle Joe, you know, Apostle Joe can do whatever he wants. And that's really frightening, because as soon as everybody in that church buys in, he now can do anything with that group of people he wants, and they will defend him with tooth and nail to anybody from the outside.
Yeah, it's also like the Catholic Church has kind of institutionalized that hierarchy that doesn't actually help.
right, that's definitely true. And we've seen that far too many times. You know, being in the Philadelphia area, you know, we've had a couple big scandals in the last, up in the Scranton area had one, and down here in Philly had one. In fact, interestingly, and not in a positive interesting way, but I work in the corrections field as my full-time job, and I used to work at one of our large prisons. And the Catholic priest who worked with me was caught up in not necessarily doing things with young boys, but part of the cover-up. So he faced jail time. And I found out really through the whole story that the reason he was working in the jail is he was kind of, you know, their checks and balance, which is bullcrap, was let's just send people who are doing things we don't like somewhere else. So yeah. they sent him to the jail because they figured, well, he's not, you know, we don't know if he was preying on people, but he definitely was covering it up. At least here, he can't really get away with that, so we'll throw him in.
Yeah.
So it was really
crazy
to think that because, you know, all of a sudden I see his name in the paper and I see that when the Pope came to town, at this point it's like 5 years ago here in Philly, he went and visited a handful of priests to kind of pray for, but also, you know, reprimand in a way some of the priests that were in the jail. He came, you know, talked to them and prayed with them and one of the priests he came was that priest, and it was just like so weird to me. Like, I used to work with that man regularly because I was a counselor, and the counselor, we worked with the chaplains very closely on certain things. So, that was just mind blowing. So it was pretty interesting, you know, bringing up the Catholic churches. Right. There's obviously some of the bureaucratic checks and balances don't work when they do exist. Because the church has, you know, the Catholic Church has found a way for years to just not let them work, just do what they want, too. So I guess that's the nature of a religious organization, and I think that's part of what you guys are getting at in your movie, right? I mean, like, or what you're getting at is a lot. It's like it can be really dangerous if someone believes something so strongly that they'll, you know, do things, cover things up, allow things to happen that no good human should ever allow.
Yeah. And we tried to keep it vague, too. There were a lot of conversations about, like, how specific should we get here.
Right.
And I think it's creepier that we don't know a lot. It makes the themes stand out a bit more, I think. So, like, we went all the way into, like, where are these people from? How long have they been here? And I was just like, let's keep it as vague as we can, because then it can kind of just examine those themes. And I think it's creepier because of it, because your mind can only come up with, like, something much more worse than I would actually tell you.
Right. Well, I mean, even, like, when, you know, and this isn't a spoiler because it happens super early in the movie, but when the reporter is having her first interview with one of the pastors, she brings up, but in kind of a vague way, some of the things that have happened at other chapters of this church, you know, and how, you know, and I mean, to the point where he blows up before you ever really get to learn any of the details of those things. But I like that because, again, like you're saying, you know there's a really sordid history of questionable stuff, but you don't know exactly what happened. And I think in reality, that's also realistic because the church is never going to let you know exactly what happened.
No.
They're never going to come clean on it. So, like, you want real life is we only know what we got through little reports out here and there and what police found out or whatever, but the internal people are still covering up tons and tons and tons of stuff. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say that some of the characters who allow bad things to happen in your film are all bad people through and through.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so difficult, I think, is they're not all bad and they're not all good.
Right. And I mean, like, you bring it to, like, you know, stepping aside from your movie just a little bit and thinking about the people that do or say bad things aren't all necessarily all bad. You know, I'm sure you experienced this because you've described, you know, you live in Texas, you have a conservative family, but, you know, I have a lot of family members who are real, I have a few that are real vocal and most that are kind of quietly Trump supporters. And, I bring that up to say, man, supporting Trump is a really bad thing right now. There's really no way to put it that makes it positive, at least as far as I see.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think that, like, you know, my uncle who, whatever, because he has that Trump sign on and watches Fox News, is he a bad guy? Well, no, he still does a lot of good things for the community, for our family. But, like, man, that is so hard to wrap my mind around the fact that he still can, you know, put a fresh Trump sign up in the heart of the Black Lives Matter protest on his front lawn. Like, whoa! Like, that blows my mind, you know? And, and that's the same kind of thing as, like, the better people in your film, who are not bad people through and through, but allow bad things to happen in front of them, even help cover them up. You know, like, that blows my mind. It's like, how can you compartmentalize the fact that you do all these good things, but you somehow convince yourself that this thing that's clearly not good by any logical sense is okay?
As someone who bought into it all for a while, it's like you get used to finding the internal arguments that they hammer into your head. So your sense of logic is actually just a warped sense of it. So you're explaining away why you are the good guy to people who can clearly see that you're just insane. And, it's a hard thing to come out of. But I don't get the Trump thing either. It's like, okay, but at a certain point, how does your conscience feel about saying, okay, those things might be bad, but it's okay because X, Y, and Z. It's like X, Y, and Z don't matter if A, B, and C are so huge. Like,
right, exactly.
Like, the good will always outweigh the bad, and if the bad is terrible, then I don't really need a part of it.
No, I think I'm with you on that. And, you know, I mean, anyone who's listened to me speak on any of my podcasts or anything knows that I'm a flaming liberal. All right. So, you know, whatever, you know, just, and while I grew up in the church, I was probably pretty radicalized as a liberal, not by my faith, but then eventually actually my faith became part of that. By the fact that I was heavily immersed in the punk rock scene and grew up near New York City. So I got a lot of the 90s hip hop scene kind of flew into my radar and that stuff really kind of opened my eyes to a lot of stuff in my adolescence. And then when I went to a Christian college, and despite the fact the student body was quite conservative, especially the young student body, because they kind of all become a little less conservative when you have teachers who aren't, they eventually kind of open up a little bit. Plus it's just part of, like, you know, being away from home and whatever. But like, but the faculty was very social justice minded. And so that was a large part of what drew me there. And because I was into that stuff because of kind of coming out of this punk rock scene and whatever. And eventually my faith and my more, you know, liberal, radical mind on social justice and stuff really flowed, especially with seeing, like, oh, God, dude, like, Jesus is about this stuff. You know, like, so, you know, my, while I'm not, you know, a church guy, my faith is very involved in how I view the world in this social justice. And, like, and I'm even, you know, when I talk to people who aren't necessarily believers, or, like, you know, it sounds like you came out of this faith, but you're not really part of it now. Like, but I still see it, like, Jesus's teachings to me are very leftist and are very much like welcome everyone and love everyone, you know. And there's probably some weird shit in the Old Testament that negates that. But, like, you know, if I don't accept the Bible as a book of contradictions, then I'm just lying to myself, because there's one verse next to the other sometimes don't go. They just don't, you know, and even biblical, like theologians, like actual, like, well-learned theologians have to admit that. So it's interesting, you know, coming to that. I like talking to someone like you who, you know, came through a more conservative view, but, like, it sounds like you kind of came out the other end as not really part of it at all. Is that kind of fair to say?
It was a long journey, but more or less, yes. But also I'm out of it under understanding where people like you come from and probably ultimately envying people like you, but also still not seeing a reason why it should be, for me, somebody
right.
like you.
If that oh, that's fair.
Sense. Like, I'm,
no, 100%.
And, So I was in, I was homeschooled, and then I was in a private school till 8th grade. For all of high school, I went to a public school, and that was, like, the first time I was really exposed to, like, there are billions of people on the planet, and they don't all think the same way, but just because they don't think exactly how you're supposed to does not mean that they're evil. And that changed a lot, and then I had to go back to a Christian college that was smaller than my high school. And my high school was small in general. I went to like a specialized pre-med kind of a high school, and then that was about 800 people total, and then the college I went to was maybe like 400 people total.
Oh wow. So it was like a little Bible college kind of thing.
Yeah, it was Covenant College in Chattanooga. I'm not sure if you've heard of it or not, but
no, I'm not familiar with it, but I'm sure I'm familiar with the type of school it is.
Yeah. It's a liberal arts college, and you were exposed to multiple approaches to everything about the Bible there, but also, like, if you were gay, you could go, but then you had to go to therapy to cure yourself. So,
yeah, that's
liberal,
crazy
but
to
a point.
Right.
And the same things that you had to, like, girls were allowed only on certain hours and all that kind of stuff. But I just, in college, I really tried to get back into it after everything I'd been exposed to. And then even after I left college, there was a lot of questioning and anger. And I'm more zen about it now. But it was a harder, it was a super hard thing to come out of, particularly when, like, I was raised so much in it that the people that I used to be able to go to for answers were no longer the people I could do that to. So I kind of had to find my own way. Now, that being said, my relationship with my parents is better than ever. We actually shot portions of the film at their house. They were involved in the whole thing. So even though they don't agree with it 100%, what's been interesting to me is how people like you or my parents say, yeah, this is the extreme part of religion, but it doesn't mean that it's all bad, which is something I discovered as well, because I just assumed people who took the job were all kind of the same mindset as me. And then I learned, but like, we have a Jewish actor, a Baptist actor, a Catholic actor, and an atheist DP, like all these kinds of people were on the film. So I was like, okay, maybe this is broader than I thought. So that's been a nice and interesting thing to see. So.
Well, definitely. And like, I've always seen, well, not always, I mean, in my adult life, at least, I've seen myself as kind of an insider-outsider, like, in that I don't fit into the church, but I also am still kind of an insider in that I share some beliefs with the church, and so I find this kind of art, like, very refreshing, because I still care enough about the church that I want them to see themselves in a mirror like this. And even like, you know, even my mom's church, which is not, well, my mom literally just retired last week because, her church had literally died out, like, cause they were all aging. And so they actually deeded their church to another church and, had their final service. But that said, right. My mom, is the pastor. It's funny. That's the other weird thing. My mom's the pastor. I'm my dad. So that's another weird, like, being a pastor's kid, and my mom's the pastor. She, you know, I still want people like at her church to see certain parts of what they need to look at in themselves in a movie like this. Like, and myself, I look at myself in this movie as a mirror. Like, yeah, I'm not going out and doing some of the awful things that they do, and I don't have the same kind of, you know, religious bigotry in a lot of ways, but there's things about how they do things that maybe I still prescribe to, or maybe I subconsciously prescribe to. And I think it's important to, like, see films like this and consume art like this. And that's something I think the church very poorly does, is they don't self-examine well. And no. So, like, this is the kind of art that can help you with that. And it doesn't matter, like, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time, and you said you made some comedies, and so I assume you liked some comedies. Saved is one of my favorite movies of all time. And what's weird is that movie is like, it hits me spiritually more than 99% of quote unquote Christian art or Christian music or Christian whatever. There's actually like really deeply moving things about that movie for me, that are spiritual religious truths to me, but it's also a satire about, you know, the church and the Christian school. Yeah. And so there's so much about it that, like, I think holds a funny, you know, it's a very funny, but it still holds a knife to the culture, you know, like saying, yo, this, you know, look at this, you know, and they have no choice but to, and I guess I said they shouldn't say they don't have no choice. A lot of people just don't watch it.
Sure. Yeah.
But I think films,
I think at
like
the
yours,
end of the film, too, she's into the whole thing still, too.
Right.
Yeah.
She kind of comes back to it a little bit. Like, she kind of walks away from it fully, and it kind of comes back to it. But, like, everybody's got a different type of faith at the end. I mean, like, the most moving moment in that film for me is when the professed atheist literally prays to God. And and it's not necessarily that it's the God we know as Christians, but it's she needs help. And she's willing to turn to wherever for help to know she needs it from somewhere else. And, like, that hits me. Like, it's just, like, it's part of the human condition. It's like, we can't do it on our own. Is it a higher power in a traditional sense, or is it some kind of inner power? Is it some kind of people we just need to lean on? But I think it's a part of the human condition, and, like, that realization of, like, this is bigger than me. I can't do it on my own. And, like, that moment hits me really hard every time I watch it, too, which is, you know, I've seen it probably 24 times at least. And that's probably a conservative estimate, to be honest, because I'm the kind of person that can just beat movies to death. But I can't get sick of that one. Like, it's the one I just don't get sick of. And I think, like, while your movie's intensity is probably, like, a movie I can't watch over and over, because it's just intense. But the actual, like, message from it, I think, is something that, like, man, I love that kind of art, because I think it really makes the church have to look at itself if it's willing to engage in this art. You know, I'm a huge fan of Kevin Smith's Red State. I don't know if that's a film that you're a fan of.
I adore that movie. Yeah.
I mean, I would go as far as to say, and I'm a Jersey guy, so, like, the original Jersey trilogy and a Jersey film, they're all things that, like, I care about. I grew up in that heyday. Like, I'm in high school when Clerks comes out. You know, that's big to me.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah, I was like,
but,
when Clerks came out.
I'm an old guy. I'm pushing 40 now, but,
nah, you're good.
But, but, well, trust me, you're only as old as you feel, they tell you, and I feel like I'm 60, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, no.
but in all seriousness, like, so I don't say this lightly, but Red State might actually be my favorite film of his, because I think it's saying so much. You know, and I'm one of the people that absolutely adores the ending for the trumpet sounding and all. I mean, like, I just love it.
Yeah.
But,
it all comes down to the speech by Goodman at the end. And that's just like the perfect way to, like, end that. And, even though they cut to the scene of him in jail at the end, which, by the way, I think it's, I would love to ask him, like, if he purposefully cast himself as the guy in jail that just shuts the fuck up to him at the end, because it's like, are you playing a character, or is that you yourself saying shut the fuck up to all of this?
Right. Well, yeah. And Kevin Smith's life journey with the church is so interesting too. I mean, I'm sure you know at least a little bit about, you know, for the longest time, he was still, even, you know, into the time I was in college, he used to attend Catholic Mass with a friend of mine. You know, like, like he went every week, you know, like that was a thing for him. And he actually only, and you know, he's come back and forth of saying, like, now he considers himself an atheist, and he's an agnostic, and he's not really sure what he believes, and he kind of goes back and forth, but like, his public wrestling with like Catholic catechisms and rituals is so interesting. Like my other probably favorite film of him is Dogma. Another one that really goes, you know, heavy into religious dogma, you know, and it's so
Dogma is a film by him too. That was made by a guy that's still bought into the whole thing and was an earnest examination of it all. Which is
And I love like the intro where he says that if you don't believe God has a sense of humor, just look at the platypus. You know, like I kind of love that. You know, like but you're right, it is an earnest examination. And you know, Red State was on that time where he was starting to really question if he believed anymore. But it's still a really interesting. You know, he might have just said he didn't, and then said he. I don't know. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
But I find the whole, like, those two films are really interesting because there is still a place, even as a non-believer now, there's still a place of love for the believer by him, like, because it's part of his life, but he's, I think a lot of his challenging of it is both internally challenging himself, challenging the church to be better, you know, like, do better, like, be better, you know, and I love that because, and that's what I think, like, you know, your film kind of does that, you know, in its own way. It really, I think to me, it challenges me as a believer to be better, you know, and I like that a lot. And, I just wish that, you know, if you grew up in this culture, you know how bad Christian movies are.
Yeah.
There are so few and far between that I actually like. There's a handful I think are pretty good movies. Most of the time, I only find out they're Christian movies after the fact because they weren't marketed as such because they're decent movies and a real not Christian film company decided to rep them and pick them up.
Yeah, particularly so, these last 10 years or so, you've had these like God's Not Dead kind of things, which is just I don't see how people can get inspired from it. And I also understand the non-believer is always painted as like the worst one dimension.
Oh my god! Yes,
ever. Yeah.
Or like I don't know if you've seen. I hate watched both of the first two God's Not Dead movies. I know there's apparently a third or a fourth or whoever knows now, but but in the first one, the thing that like upset me so much wasn't even the atheist, but it was the depiction of the Muslim dad.
Yeah, I was going to say too. It's awful.
Cruel he is to his daughter just because she wants to go to church. Like, and she wants, you know, and that's bullshit.
And also that's like, the only Muslim character in the whole film. So it's like, really?
Of course.
This is what we're going to, It's like.
I grew up in a mafia town in North Jersey. So everybody's Italian Catholic where I grew up. So I always joke to people I was a white male that was somehow a minority because I was a Protestant. You know what I mean? And so, like, North Jersey is really diverse. However, my town, not so much. So, like, I graduated with 106 kids. 3 were black. And, 3 out of 106 kids were black, and maybe another 8 to 10 were Asian or Indian.
Wow.
Of descent. Now, the Asian and Indian families were mostly, well, even the black families that were in our town were mostly well-to-do. Like, for instance, my one friend in school was Colin Powell's nephew. You know, like, So they're not exactly like, you know, it was a pretty upper middle class town. I would joke that I was the poor kid as a true middle class American. I was the poor kid, you know, because everybody else was, and I was not lower middle class. I was true middle class. Like, we had money. We were fine. But like, you know, our town, we didn't have any kind of lower income housing in my town. You know, Jack Cafferty lived in my town, you know, when he was an anchor in New York. Like, these are, you know, it's a wealthy place. But I bring that up to say, you know, it's just crazy, like, growing up there, it was just so bizarre to see, man, I just lost my entire train of thought, you know, talking about Mafia Town I grew up in. What were we talking about? I lost it.
So into the story, too. I lost Diversity,
and stuff. But it was talking about the church.
From Kevin Smith to, God's Not Dead.
Yes. Okay, so while we're back, you actually brought me right back. God's Not Dead. So, I had several Muslim friends, and friends of other non-Christian religions, even though there were only a handful of them in town. They were, you know, it's stereotypical, but they were all in the smart classes and I was in smart classes. So I knew all that.
Sure.
And so what's interesting is a couple of them came to church with me and did things. Their parents were never like, oh, you're Muslim. You're not allowed to go see what a Christian church is like. Like, I never experienced that at all. In fact, the only, like, overbearing fathers who treated their daughters like crap were, mostly Italian Catholic men that I grew up around. So, like, you know, they were churchgoers. In fact, they were ones who were there every Sunday. It doesn't mean that they were always good to their family. So, you know, those movies are so infuriating. And the second one, I don't know why, it took me three times to watch it, but I forced myself to watch it because of how much I hated the first one. And, like, all I remember is, like, somehow Jesse Metcalf, like, helps Melissa Joan Hart, like, they're putting God on trial. I don't know. I'm confused by it.
I worked at the theater for the first one, and I was always confused because there's a concert at the end of it, like, just this inexplicable Newsboys concert. And I would walk into the end of the movie and be like, is this the same fucking movie? Because it's just so, just so random.
Oh, man. Hey, and listen, and I like some Newsboys songs. I'm not going to lie. I grew up in
no,
church culture.
old school Newsboys. I'll still listen. I'll listen to Michael W. Smith. And
there you go,
kind of,
man. That's funny.
Yeah.
And I, you know, my mom is a pastor, so I grew up on, you know, A.B. Grant and Sandy Patty and all that stuff. And But even as a punk kid, I still was a big, like, Tooth and Nail Records guy and all that. But, I could go on and on. I really want to, you know, kind of just tie back to the film. And I think that, you know, hearing where you come from and where you're coming to, I completely kind of get what you're going for. And I think I got it already because of me, the film, I think really, even if you pull out all this messaging and all this points that we're making, it stands alone really well as a good thriller, you know, and I think that that's great too, because you have multiple, you know, levels people can watch this as. If you're not interested in the religious iconography and the actual, you know, struggle that's going on there, that doesn't mean you can't enjoy the film.
Yeah. And it's so cliche to say, like, I spent probably 2.5 years of my life on this thing, from the final script to, like, now. We shot the movie at the end of 2018, like, right before Christmas is when we wrapped, which, that pool seems cold as hell, because it was cold outside. But it's been interesting to see what people pull from it. I've had people like you who come from a religious background, and they're like, "Oh, I know these people." And then I have people who are like, "Wow, this is just a fun, crazy movie. How'd you come up with this?" I'm like, "Well, I live some of this," and they're like, "Really?" So it's just weird to see. It's not up to me now how people respond to it.
Right.
I'm happy that you think that it works. I don't think it's a preachy film. I'm hoping it's
no, it's not at all.
But
it's a thriller
that also has some. Yeah.
and I think with your family, you know, you said being conservative and being supportive, you know, if a conservative, you know, Christian can be supportive of this film, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to look at it and be like, oh, it's preaching an anti-me message just because I'm a Christian. No, it's not.
No.
Not at all, you know.
And I was talking to somebody, and they were like, honestly, if you're offended by this movie, then maybe that's, like, a terrifying thing about you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think you're right. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
I think you're right on that, yeah.
But the kind of films I like to make, too, is everybody's flawed. And I think all of these characters are terrible in some ways by the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not a one-sided kind of a film. It's hopefully it feels like an even approach to it.
Right. There's no real heroes in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's fully good, and it is good. And I think that's, you know, if we're going to be real about life, you know, we might not do anything seriously bad that gets us arrested or whatever, but we're not, none of us are perfect, you know, give me a break. So, you know, the generally good person still has that flaw, you know, and sometimes can do something pretty heinous, even if they're not a bad person. And that's, you know, it's something to look at on both sides, you know, I mean, whether it's the religious person or the non-religious person, you know, so.
For sure, for sure.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, well, thanks for talking, and I'm really excited we got a chance to talk. I'm excited to follow kind of where you go from here, man. I you know, whether it's more religious content or not, whether this kind of exercise those demons for a while or maybe you got more of them to exercise, I don't know.
I'm hoping not. I had so much, like, Jesus for the last 2 years. I'm like, let's make something else because there's more to me than this.